Last Thursday marked the 50th anniversary of Lolita, written by Vladimir Nabokov and rejected by five American publishers before landing at the infamous Olympia Press in Paris. Olympia trafficked in two hot-to-handle books, from Tropic of Cancer by Henry Miller to There's a Whip in My Valise by Greta X. Lolita is, of course, the story of a middle-aged man's obsession with and abduction of a young girl. There's a lot of speculation as to the inspiration for the story. Alexander Delinin, a lecturer in Slavic languages at the University of Wisconsin, announced this month that the plot derives from the kidnapping of young Sally Horner in the 1940s, who spent 21 months under the control of a car mechanic. After all, Nabokov mentions the case in his novel. The most enduring potential antecedent is a German short story titled Lolita, about an older man obsessed with a young girl, published in 1916. The author was Heinz von Leichberg. Was Nabokov a plagiarist? Or, as New York Observer columnist Ron Rosenbaum posed in a column last year, did he suffer from cryptonesia?
Well, I didn't invent the term cryptonesia to apply to this particular case. It was a German professor, Michael Marr, who was the one who actually discovered this 1916 story. And cryptonesia is sort of one of four possible ways to explain what Nabokov did. And the European press and a lot of Nabokovians are all in a tizzy because it's been played up as plagiarism. But it could be entirely coincident. Nabokov never read this story, although Professor Marr seems to have research that shows that Nabokov, in his exile from Russia, lived in the same section of Berlin as the German writer who wrote the Ur-Lolita, the 1916 Lolita, under the pseudonym von Leichberg. So it could be coincidence. It doesn't seem likely. So there are three other explanations. One is that Nabokov did sort of knowingly become inspired by reading von Leichberg's 1916 story, but never mentioned it, covered it up. Or explanation number three, this phrase, word, cryptonesia, which Webster defines as the appearance in consciousness of memory images which are not regarded as such, but which appear as original creations. In other words, one day Nabokov woke up and said, I want to do a story about an underage girl called Lolita and an older man who preys on her. He didn't realize that 10, 20, 30 years before he had read this German story, Lolita. It wasn't conscious.
But what do you think?
I can't make up my mind completely, but Marr does tell us that this guy von Leichberg later became a Nazi propagandist. Nabokov was quite anti-Nazi. In fact, his brother, who was gay, died in a Nazi concentration camp. So perhaps he did take his inspiration in some way, or at least the name Lolita, from von Leichberg's story. But he just wasn't going to give this guy the posthumous satisfaction of any credit. So that's a fourth possible explanation. But the cryptonesia one is really interesting, because when I mentioned this to other writers or other writers who responded to this story, and the Observer said, you know, they, as am I, haunted by the idea that whenever you think of a phrase that you're really fond of and you put it in a story, I do at least wonder, oh, God, what if I read this phrase somewhere else by someone else and yet didn't consciously know it? And so I've left a lot of what I think are good phrases out of stories for fear of what I now know as cryptonesia.
You know, we've been discussing this literary application of cryptonesia, but I'm reminded of a musical one. Back in 1971, George Harrison was found guilty of infringing on the use of the melody from He's So Fine.
For My Sweet Lord, I know.
The judge didn't think he was consciously plagiarizing.
I thought he was found guilty and had to give the chiffons, was it, some
very good.
Some props. And
yes, the judge didn't think he was consciously plagiarizing, and yet George Harrison was forced to pay the fine.
Yeah. You know, you wonder, like, would we be happier if George Harrison didn't do My Sweet Lord? Well, maybe with that song. But nonetheless, you know, there are a lot of works of art that depend on other works of art. And a lot of literature is made up of scraps of other literature. And do we want to, like, be so purist-minded that we expect our artists to only utter things that have never been uttered before? What is new is more a way of phrasing what is old than an absolutely brand new thought about the nature of the universe.
Well, Ron, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ron Rosenbaum is a columnist for the New York Observer.
That's it for this week's show. On the Media was produced by Megan Ryan, Tony Field, Jamie York, and Mike Vuolo, and edited by Brooke. Dylan Keefe is our technical director, and Jennifer Munson, our engineer. We had help from Sarah Dalsimer, Andy Lancet, and Giselle Foss. Our webmaster is Amy Pearl.
Katya Rogers is our senior producer, and John Keefe, our executive producer. Bassist composer Ben Allison wrote our theme. This is On the Media from WNYC. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people. Online at wtgrantfoundation.org. The W.K. Kellogg Foundation, from vision to innovative impact, 75 years of philanthropy. And the Charles Stewart Mott Foundation, online at mott.org, supporting efforts to promote a just, equitable, and sustainable society. Support for On the Media comes from the Lincoln Center, presenting Lang Lang, performing Chopin's first piano concerto with the New York Philharmonic under music director Lauren Mazel, on Live from Lincoln Center, sponsored by MetLife, airing September 22nd on PBS, and the Bidell Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, the John and Anna Maria Phillips Foundation, the Overbrook Foundation, and the listeners of WNYC Radio. This is NPR.